Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
It listens, learns, adapts, and anticipates your every need. With intelligence that feels anything but artificial. The EQS from Mercedes-Benz. It's the car electric has been waiting for.
Okay, so that's an ad for Mercedes-Benz, but what if you had to pay extra every month to actually use that intelligence, whether it's extending the driving range on an electric vehicle or maybe paying for the heated seats? Here's the situation. Apps are available to create things like that, but some automakers want you to have to start basically subscribing to get them. That's the subject for today's piece from Boston Globe's Hiawatha Bray. And Hiawatha's here in studio for this week's Tech Talk to talk about it. Welcome back, Hiawatha.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I am going to have to subscribe to my own car as if it were Netflix?
Well, that's the direction in which it's moving. And it's due to this fascinating transformation of what's happening to vehicles. In the industry, they call it the software-defined car. Which sounds really geeky, and it is in some ways, but it reflects the fact that today's car is basically a rolling data center, and much of the value of a modern automobile is not the engine block or the wheels or the brakes, all of which are becoming almost sort of generic. And believe me, when we have electric cars, they're going to be extremely generic. They're going to be very similar from one manufacturer to another. What's going to be really different is the software controlling all that. And companies are looking for ways to turn the software into a major profit center for these vehicles.
Okay, so let's back up for a second. I can imagine a listener saying, I'm sorry, wait, cars have apps? I mean, so explain this.
Well, that's not new. There have been apps for cars for some time. If you're talking in terms of your smartphone, you've got an app that lets you control various things. But yeah, the car itself is going to have, in effect, apps that you can download to change the performance characteristic of the vehicle. This is not even a new idea. My favorite example of it is the Dodge Hellcat. This has been around for a while. There is a Dodge super fast car called a Hellcat. When you buy it, you get two ignition keys. One of them gives you 500 horsepower. The other one gives you 700 horsepower. Because each key, when you insert it, changes the software that the engine control system uses. And so it decides what's going to happen. But now cars are being connected to the internet. And you will be able to download, already can for many cars, you can download software that will change the performance of the vehicle, that will give it features it didn't previously have.
And so basically, and this was interesting in your article, basically then what the car manufacturer has to do is put all that hardware capability, and let me give you an example. The app doesn't heat the seat. There's actually a heater in the seat, right?
That's right.
The app just triggers the heater in the seat. So they put all that hardware in, but then if you want it to actually work for you, you got to download an app, the car has the app, but you're going to have to pay a subscription service for that piece of hardware. That makes me feel very grumpy, Hiawatha.
This is, by the way, a huge problem with this idea. Cox Automotive, which is a research firm for the auto industry, actually did a survey, and they found overwhelming majorities of people hate this idea. They're saying, this is terrible. But in all fairness, it's not something that you have to be saddled with, because in principle, you can just pay up front for all this stuff and you don't have to worry about it.
So there's a buy it now price and a pay per month price,
basically. That's exactly right. This whole thing kicked off because of the controversy over BMW. They rushed to say they're not doing this in the U.S. market, but in the U.K. market, in South Africa, and a few other countries, if you want heated seats, you can either pay $180 extra or $18 a month. And now your seat heater works. If you think about it, that's not necessarily a bad idea. Suppose you're in a part of the world where you don't need heated seats. Well, you might need heated seats once 1 month out of the year or 2 months out of the year. You just buy it for $18 a month for those 2 months, and the rest of the time you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Sort of like you subscribe to a streaming service to watch a series, and it's done, you let go of the streaming subscription.
Absolutely. Hey, The Mandalorian's over. I'm turning this mess off.
I did like The Mandalorian.
Oh, I love The Mandalorian, but I'm sorry, that Obi-Wan Kenobi was lame. Oh, it's
no,
terrible.
Don't say anything. We're watching it now.
Oh,
don't
I'm
say
sorry.
Anything.
It does not get better. I'm warning you now.
Okay. So to come back to the cars. So this is inevitable, is what you're saying. This is where car companies are going because they need new places to earn money.
That's right.
And this is how they can do
it. Yeah, what is it? Which company is it? Stellantis, the ones that owns Chrysler, is saying that by 2030, they expect to be making $23 billion a year off of the software that they put into cars. I mean, look at the money that Apple makes from software. One of the issues, by the way, that this is going to raise is the possibility of third-party apps running on your car and doing very interesting things. There are already
third-party apps, you mean? Like sneaky third-party
apps?
No,
I'm talking about legitimate ones, like Apple. Everybody forgets this. When the iPhone came out, you could not put third-party apps on it. It was blocked. You only could use apps written by Apple. And eventually they said, oh, all right, we'll let other people write apps for the phone.
I had forgotten that.
And they have made hundreds of billions of dollars off of that since. And the same thing could happen with cars. So an app that would change. For example, I drove this electric pickup, and even already built into the pickup, there are multiple modes you can set for the suspension system. You could imagine somebody inventing a Grand Canyon mode that would actually be computer controlled to make this particular car perform better while driving it through the Grand Canyon, or an I-93 during traffic jam mode.
Mount Washington mode. Yeah,
exactly.
There
you could do that. And some third party company could write that app, and in theory, you could put it on your car, and it would work.
Okay, so here's the other thing that's on my mind about this. It's not going to surprise you. It's the question of repairs. And the first thing that came to mind for me was the right to repair debate in 2020, and that was this ballot initiative to give local mechanics access to the telematics, which we've talked to you about before. Mm-hmm. That's critical car data collected by the manufacturer. So I'm just for listeners, for a refresher, this is WBUR reporter Callum Borchers, who was summarizing the debate at the time for us.
You might find it easier to anticipate and fix problems yourself, again, if you're handy. If you have a trusty independent mechanic, that shop also might be better able to notify you of future problems. That's the upside. You know, the downside is that there is some measure of risk inherent in expanding access to data. You know, question one advocates point out that the ballot measure refers specifically to mechanical data. And so the argument is the info isn't really very personal, even if it were to be hacked. But opponents insist that actually some pretty personal info could be lumped under that mechanical umbrella and become vulnerable to abuse.
So right to repair passed in 2020. We'll come to the status in a minute. But what Callum is saying there sounds extra important given what you're saying here.
I'm not sure it relates to this aspect of software, because here we're not talking about stuff mainly that is likely to have a privacy impact. That's more the software that's going to be in all our cars, whether we pay extra or not, because all these cars are tracking us with extraordinary detail. I mean, like finding out that a newer car, when somebody is sitting in the back seat, the car knows there's somebody sitting in the back seat. It knows where you are, it knows what time it is, and it knows somebody was in the back seat of your car. You can see how that would be really sensitive information. But that kind of software is basically being built into pretty much all cars now.
And you can't turn it off like you can turn off location tracking on a cell phone?
There's no, at least as far as I know, there's no way usually to turn this stuff off directly. And this raises this whole question of what kind of laws we're going to need to regulate that. This is one of the reasons why you're going to need some kind of a national privacy standard, because at the very least, there should be some way to require that this information not be saved. For example, you might want, we already have this with the black boxes in today's cars, where it only saves a few seconds of data and the rest is immediately discarded. You might want to make sure that the law says that the car companies can't keep this data beyond a certain period of time. But that's the kind of thing you're going to have to deal with by law, because these companies are already building that stuff, and in all fairness, there are really good, valid uses for it, and you don't want to completely stop them from doing it.
So you had my hair on fire a little bit a couple of times ago when you were here, and you started talking about privacy issues, especially, and we talked before and after the Supreme Court ruling on Roe v. Wade,
right
the validity or the constitutionality of Roe v. Wade, because of the tracking capability. You raised the scenario at the time of, let's say, an anti-abortion group tracking, using publicly sold tracking data to find out if women were crossing state lines to seek abortion care.
Well, obviously something like that could happen. And so the whole point is, and of course, abortion is on the table here, but one of the aspects of what happened with Roe is that it's got people thinking about this right across the spectrum, because this is something that could be applied into a whole range of applications that have people really scratching their heads and going, why are we letting these people collect all this data about us?
And so there's movement now that there hasn't been before.
We think there's movement. There's been efforts in Congress, and they seem to be coming up with some kind of a bipartisan strategy, but only time will tell, because for years, this is one of those weird issues where Republicans and Democrats all say, yes, we got to do something about it, but nothing ever gets done. And only time will tell whether that will actually happen.
So I'm interested in that because the articles that I've read have suggested that this is a bipartisan potential.
Right.
That everybody recognizes the I don't want people to be able to follow me appeal. So why, I mean, okay, why is this not a no-brainer to get passed?
Well, there are little details that they're arguing about. For example, the question of whether or not the federal law will preempt any of the state laws because the federal law, the companies all say, oh, yes, we're all for this. We want a federal law. And the reason, some argue, is because they want one that will have as little impact as possible and that will then override laws in other states. The people on the other side say, no, other states like California want to have extremely strict laws and they should be allowed to have laws as strict as they want no matter what the federal government does. And that's been a stumbling block right there. Now, there's talk that they're finally starting to come together on that issue. Again, we'll just have to wait and see.
Are you optimistic?
I think so in the long run. I mean, people are just tearing their hair about this, and everyone agrees that something like this needs to happen. So I just don't see how something does not happen eventually. It's got to happen sooner or later.
Okay, so speaking of laws, I want to walk us back in the conversation. I flagged this before, and it's something we covered quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I want to come back to it. And this is the right to repair, right?
Ugh.
Which is right. Exactly. That sigh is why I want to bring it back, because it was supposed to be in place 2022 and it's not. And
right.
You've been following that.
Yeah. Well, we're waiting for the judge. The federal judge is hearing a case. The automakers are arguing that the state has no right to do this. It's a federal responsibility. And they have also made the argument. And this was, I thought, a pretty good one. When the law was passed in 2020, it had to be enacted model year 2022. The car maker said, there's no way we can do that in time. It takes 3 to 4 years to design systems like this. Frankly, they're right. But now it's been almost 2 years, so they've had time. So we'll have to wait and see how the car makers deal with this. Also, some federal regulators pointed out that the way the Massachusetts law is drafted, all car makers would have to connect to a single data portal, and that really does pose really serious security risks. So it's going to be hard to build this system to have it be really secure and not get hacked so that people can potentially access every car in the state. So it's going to be a challenge.
And this is, so just to remind listeners, the issue here, the deal here is that there's a bunch of mechanical information that the automakers can track, but so far they have not had to, they can keep that proprietary.
That can
make it harder for an independent mechanic to service your car.
Well, you got to understand, a lot of this data, if you're plugging into the car, the law already requires that they make this available. This is the ability to get the data wirelessly. That's the big change here. And what's going to happen is you'll be driving down the street and you'll get a message from Ford or from GM or from Toyota saying, it's time to bring your car in for maintenance. If this law is passed, you will be able to sign up with Midas or Monroe or anybody, and they will get that data. So they will call you and you will take it to their shop. And that's what they want to be able to do. And it makes sense to me. But figuring out the details of how to do it in a secure way is going to be a little nutty.
So since I'm asking you to prognosticate on all kinds of things today, mm-hmm. how many years before this is all worked out and there is right to repair in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and model years from the major manufacturers that actually have it in place?
Oh, it's going to happen in the near future, in the next several years. Absolutely. Everybody seems to want it except the car companies, and it's going to be inevitable. And there's even this law is sitting, I don't know if it made it through conference. There's supposed to be an electronic right to repair law that is also likely to be enacted. And that way, that will require phone companies, you know, like smartphone companies, to provide you with the data and tools to fix your own phone, for example, or computer companies will have to provide the information you need to fix your own computer. That's on the table, too. The support for this is pretty much universal. Everybody agrees when you buy something, you should be able to control it, which brings us back to these cars, by the way, because this is going to raise a fascinating legal issue. You buy a car. There's a feature on it that you can't activate without paying them for software. Somebody hires a hacker to unlock it for them. There are already hackers working on this. They're going to unlock the features on your car that Toyota wants you to pay extra for, right? Is that a crime? How are you going to prosecute somebody? Say, hey, I bought the car. What do you mean I can't hack my own car?
Right. It's my car.
Exactly.
Interesting. And so, you're saying those hacking companies exist now.
Well, they're not companies. They're people who are, they're absolutely people who are trying to figure out how to do this. There's a great piece in Vice.com about this the other day. People who are just studying the systems that these people are putting into their cars to try to figure out how I can unlock it without having to go through a car maker. You know it's going to happen.
I learn so much every time you're here. That is Hiawatha Bray, who's the technology writer for the Boston Globe. It's Tech Talk. Hiawatha, thanks for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome.